timer is started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Forging Worlds. I'm Alan.
And I'm Matt.
And today we are back with our retro future, I think is what we landed on, high school. But it's also on a different planet. And it's all sorts of cool. We're very excited about it. Paradiso.
I don't think retro future. It was just future.
In the year 2000.
No, it was just future.
In the year 2000.
So we're both very tired, boys. And oops, life happened. So sorry, this is going to be
I work at a university. And the first week of classes was this week. And last week was like move-in and all that stuff. So I am dead.
We're very happy that he pulled himself up to do this one. So we need to dive in. So last time we covered extensively the background of this world.
Yes.
Probably too extensively, but it was fun.
Probably, but it was very enjoyable.
Yeah. So I think today we're going to start off with kind of talking about the planet itself and then kind of zoom our focus in from there. Right, Alan?
Yes. I think one thing that that should be going without saying, but by saying that means that I need to say it. Basically, this planet is what I would refer to as a Star Trek M-class planet, right? It's hospitable to human life. It may not be exactly the same as Earth, but the atmospheric composition is very similar, that kind of thing.
Yeah, super, super Earth-like planet called Paradiso because, as in all the good sci-fis, when you find a planet like that, you just call it paradise and hope it doesn't get blown up, which it almost invariably does.
Yep. Will this one? Stay tuned.
Well, I mean, we won't decide that. We'll just lay some groundwork for explosions. We just plant the charges. We don't set them off.
Speaking of groundwork for explosions, and this is probably just because I'm very tired and I think it would be funny, but what if there was slightly more helium in the atmosphere?
What do you mean? Like, to
so
wind.
Everyone's voices are slightly higher in Paradiso than they are on Earth.
That feels weird.
The reason, or something like that, I want there to be, like, that was a joke, but I want there to be, all joking aside, something about being there that feels different than Earth. Do you know what I mean?
I mean,
like, I don't want people to ever forget, if they're inside a building that looks like it could be from Earth, there's something there that reminds them, I'm not on Earth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand that, and I think there's maybe some easier ways we can do that, because if this is going to be like an RPG kind of setting, having it where everyone has to pitch their voices up just a little bit more, that gets exhausting.
That's true. That was mostly a joke.
It's a good point, though. Like, it's a good point that needs
maybe
to be
gravity's
made.
A little different.
That's what I was thinking. That's a good way to handle it. Like, I would say either let's go heavier or lighter, which, okay, I'm sorry, I'm tired. Those are literally the only two options.
Which one are you leaning towards?
I prefer a lighter gravity, personally.
I was thinking the same.
So I think let's aim for a lighter gravity, because here was kind of my entire thought on how this planet got colonized. With the technology that we set up last time, you know, we set up kind of those Stargate-y wormholes, right, that do near instantaneous travel.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is once they found a suitable planet, any of the three races, really, once they found a suitable planet, they can set up a Stargate, like, from their home world or whatever their departure world is to the new world. So in a lot of ways, since this is the kind of the human-based planet, and I think it also will bear to be said right up front, Alan and I are both Americans, and so a lot of what we talk about is going to be from an American point of view, and we both also will probably, I'm kind of speaking for Alan here, but I'm sure he'll contradict me if he disagrees. we both know that there are way better school systems in the world than the American one. Preach,
brother, preach.
But that's what we have to kind of go on. Like, I know the European model's better, and I know, what is it, Finland is just a million times better than almost everything.
Yeah.
So I apologize if we don't use them as models. We can probably just assume that that's what's being used because that's better, but we're probably going to default to some words and phrases that relate to our experience, which is American high school. Yay. So that aside, with these Stargates, when you set them up, basically what I'm picturing is this is a human colony world. And unlike kind of a traditional colony attitude where it's like, we're going to pack you up on a ship and send you off and hope for the best. This is, nah, we're going to open up a Stargate and we're just going to drive buses through, and we're going to drive like industrial building materials through and tools through, and for a little while, food through until y'all get all settled. Like this
until they become self-sustaining.
Yeah, this isn't so much a colony as it is like, hey, we're going to start a new city. It's a bunch of light years away, but it's literally right through that glowing door over there. So in some ways, like, yeah, we need to have a differentiator so that people know, like, oh, I've stepped onto Paradiso. It's lighter here. And there's, like, a spare moon or something.
Or even an extra sun.
Oh, that could be weird. We'll need to talk about that. Which is why we're talking about the planet this time first. Mm-hmm. But kind of that is my entire idea. This is not a Roanoke situation. This is not a Jamestown situation. This is not any sort of colonizing like that. This is just like, hey, we're just going to move to this other city that's just so far away, but literally next door. You can still talk to us every day if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about this planet.
So now that I've mentioned multiple suns, I immediately go to, are you familiar with Isaac Asimov's Nightfall?
No.
It's probably my favorite.
Asimov I've actually read is Foundation.
It's probably my favorite Asimov work. It's about a planet with seven suns, and it only experiences nightfall once every 3,000 years. And so it's like an apocalyptic event when all the suns go down and there is darkness, because there is never darkness.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of deals with like the psychological effects of darkness and like how this civilization survives, spoiler alert, not very well. Essentially what they find out is that this nightfall is a reset button every 3,000 years because they tear themselves apart in the dark. And basically destroy everything they have to generate light. But anyways, I'm not thinking something that extreme, but I do think like a shorter night cycle would be interesting. So because there are multiple suns, two, three, whatever, they populate the sky more often. And like maybe when multiple suns are present, it becomes a little uncomfortable to be outside because of the radiation.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely need something like that. Like, I think there has to be some way though, cause you can't, well, no, I guess, far future radiation. That Alan, is this a domed city?
Ooh, it is, isn't it?
I mean okay, in our actual modern day reality, there is a not impossible set of plans out there to put a dome over Houston
and make the movie Biodome.
No, to counteract hurricanes.
And make the movie Biodome.
Alan, that movie had Pauly Shore and it's garbage.
And make the movie. Okay, I'm done.
We're both in a mood today.
Uh-huh.
So don't
But could I get some of that hurricane protection down here, Mobile? That'd be lovely. Thank you.
I mean, here's part of the problem. Houston would never do it in a million years.
It would create an infinite amount of problems.
It would create many problems, not the least of which is Houston is one of the most polluted cities out there. Like, mm-hmm. At night, you can see it glowing.
you would smother yourselves.
Yeah, almost immediately. Plus, there's airports there, and like, it's not an unfeasible idea to have a domed city, is what I'm saying. Like, even in the year of our Lord 2018, it's not unfeasible. It's entirely possible. It just wouldn't happen. With
it's just wholly impractical. And,
you would have to develop a whole lot of solutions to problems that you aren't even aware of yet.
Yep.
But that aside, if we're jumping a few centuries into the future, we can just kind of hand wave those. Problem solved.
I mean, it could just be force fields a la Terra Venture from Lost Galaxy.
Well, see, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking an actual dome, like an actual physical dome.
Transparasteel.
We're not allowed to steal things from other universes, Alan.
Not transparasteel. Wink.
A transparent material that counteracts a lot of the radiation. And maybe even does it like photovoltaic. So that's a lot of the city's power.
Heck yeah.
Because I think now they actually have photovoltaic cells that are just glass. Transparent.
Transparent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that provides a lot of the power, neutralizes the radiation, and, you know, probably prevents. If we're going to have two suns, I imagine there's actually some pretty severe weather patterns, too.
Oh, yeah. And depending on how close the planet is, solar storms. You know, if it's a binary system and the stars are close enough, they could interact. And, you know, that interaction could
I feel like that needs to be
a strong thing that could be a problem.
I feel like that needs to be rare.
I mean, that could be a very interesting plot hook.
Yeah, like definitely it can exist, but I think it needs to be rare because, and so does the really extreme weather. Because this is supposed to be a very Earth norm planet.
Right. It's supposed to be paradise.
So I imagine there's probably like every like, I don't know, 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
The solar's like the way the sun's aligned causes a solar surge and makes the weather go haywire. And like the colonists have lived through one of these and now it's rolling around again.
Mm hmm.
And because people lived through it and recorded it and took data measurements and everything, someone probably knows exactly what's going to go haywire and can probably plan around that.
Right.
If this was going to be a heist game, there's your in.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of hooks. We'll get to those. Okay, so I like the two suns. I like the domed city. I like the weather patterns. That
I have another question. Yes. And this is my biology nerd coming out in me. What are these life forms based on? What naturally occurring life on this planet exists?
I mean, if this is going to be
Earth... Is it carbon-based life?
If it's going to be an Earth-normal planet, then it has to be carbon-based, right?
Does it?
Well, I mean, we're not very hospitable to other forms of life on our planet.
Well, I mean, there have never been other forms of life on our planet.
Presumably because they don't fit here?
True. For some reason, the sci-fi kid in me has always been fascinated by the idea of other-based life. So, like, silicon-based life or, you know, basically you take carbon and you move one square on the periodic table.
I mean, isn't part of that if you move one square on the periodic table, Earth literally becomes a hellhole for us?
Uh-huh.
So that makes it, like, going either way from a other-based life form to a carbon-based world or biome presents problems. Like, I don't mind if maybe we make one of the other two actual, like...
Species?
Physical species a non-carbon based thing, because that just gives us some interesting fun things to play with.
Mm-hmm. So the world is primarily carbon based.
I think that because it's a human based colony, it kind of needs to be.
Okay.
So I think we're going to have kind of the normal range of flora and fauna.
Could we have megaflora?
Sure. Why not? I mean, this is a lighter planet. Things are going to be bigger.
It's a lighter planet, and there is more natural sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So assuming that these things are carbon-based and assuming that they still perform photosynthesis, they will have so much more energy to grow. And based on the lighter gravity, there's a lot less holding them back.
Oh, Alan.
Oh, does that mean there are giant bugs?
Probably. Alan, I think we might have to ditch the Dome City for something better.
Okay.
I mean, okay, there's probably domed cities on the planet.
Yeah.
I think the main big city, though, if we're going to do megafauna or megaflora and megafauna, if we're going to do megaflora, imagine what a redwood scales up to in that world. The city, the main city, is built inside.
Ooh, I like that.
A mega forest like that. Like trees that are as big as a couple city blocks and as tall, like taller than skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't really live in the upper reaches of it, but down lower, closer to the ground, you can build the whole city into the trees and use kind of that dome technology to make like outcroppings and things where you can walk around more or less outside, but mm-hmm. still you live in the trees. I think that's very good because
I like the idea that we're essentially making Big World from Super Mario Brothers 3.
Ha.
That makes me very happy. So what's the fauna like?
I mean, we're going to have like probably something close to like brontosauruses, right?
I think so. Are we having like a healthy mix of reptilian-esque dinosaurs and mammalian-esque creatures? Are we leaning more predominantly in like mammals one, or what are we feeling? Is there any, this is probably a better question, is there any native sentient life on this planet?
I don't know, not sentient.
Okay. Sapient?
I mean, every animal is sapient to some degree or another. Right?
True. What is the first creature that humans try to domesticate?
Oh, it is, as it always is, some sort of bovine thing, right? Except this time, it's just like they're the size of RVs, like those big RVs.
Mm-hmm.
And probably like 6 or 8 legs.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's more mass and you don't want to unevenly distribute that, even right. with a lighter planet. So probably more legs is kind of the logic behind that I'm thinking.
Yep.
But what if like when they first dropped a probe, they're like, okay, that's a cool like protected forest area. Oh, those are really big trees. Oh, those are really big trees. Oh, those are mountains, but are trees. Mm-hmm. We're going to live there. And then, like, out of the forest wandered this, like, herd of RV-sized, like, super cows, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picturing something not... It can't be, like, super furry, but it's got to have, like...
I mean, it's vaguely mammalian. Like, I'm assuming it also produces milk.
Yeah. It probably takes a while for the colonists, like, digestive to
work up the courage
process all this. Yeah, well, I mean, like, to adapt to different amino acids and everything like that. But
oh, true.
Sure. I'm sure eventually they are domesticated and they are, gosh, the milking machine on that would be the size of a tractor.
Yep.
Okay,
I'm digging this.
We're going to spend all day on these stupid cows. There's got to be some other use for the milk other than just as milk, because Alan, buddy, that's a lot of milk.
What if it's conductive?
Oh, Alan, what if it's okay. Go with me on this journey because I think things on this planet just got weird.
I'm here for it.
So you know the concept that is largely wrong and also heavily exploited by the Assassin's Creed games that are like genetic memory?
Yes, that is very wholly bad.
Yeah, it's good storytelling. It's bad science. I'm sorry, everybody out there, but your ancestors Truth. Do not live in your blood.
Mm-mm.
Outside of like
I mean, ancestry is traceable.
Yeah,
but there is no imprint of anything other than data.
Yeah, there's no memories there. There's no actual memories. Alan, what if this milk actually conducts memories?
Ooh.
Like, that's how they pass down learning to their child. It's less instinctual and more like...
That's how they learn to domesticate, is if they deprived them of their mother's milk, they became very placid.
And they were able then to raise a generation in domestication, and then that's just what they remembered.
Yep.
But, like, that's got some weird, creepy, and very sadly human corporate overtones. But, yeah, that's exactly what we would do. But also then, Alan, if this milk can transfer memory, then they breed up some from that first stock, and they don't ever let the memories transfer to any others.
Mm-hmm.
So they have just blank memory milk. And they can use that for super efficient data transference.
Oh, absolutely.
So...
Oh, that's fascinating. So it becomes kind of like an organic...
revolutionized computing, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing after quantum computing, is it becomes almost...
an organic quantum.
An organic genetic computer.
Well, or at least memory. Like,
right.
I think they probably adapt...
storage device.
Yeah, they adapt computers to read and write it.
What happens when it starts to think? Or can it? Can it ever start to think?
That's down the road a ways, but man, that could be creepy.
You also could possibly, you know, depending on how weird we want to go with it, it could also be the cure for Alzheimer's.
Ooh, because you just imprint your memories onto it, and
uh-huh,
when
and drink it
starts to develop, you drink it and remember.
Yep.
And
that heals your brain back to where it was.
Absolutely. Okay, but there has to be like a lessened effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to get diminishing returns off of that, but you get, instead of you just suffering Alzheimer's at like 70 and then being in that state for decades, maybe you just slow that development until you pass at a normal age without as much failure of...
Right, without as much loss.
Yeah. Sorry, I hate that disease and everything about it. It is literally my greatest terror. Is that and dementia? I hate them. They are garbage. I would rather die of cancer, which is probably insensitive to someone out there, and I'm very sorry. I just hate Alzheimer's and dementia so much.
Well, then let's get off of that. I think it has a lot of really good utopic ideas that can be associated with it, but also some kind of skeevy, sketchy ones that could be plot hooks later on.
Exactly. And that I'm all about. Like, that just sounds fun. Okay. So do you like the whole, like, super tree idea for the city?
I do. I really do.
Okay. So let's talk about some other animals. We got the super cows and their troublesome nature. I imagine every roughly mammalian species has something similar to that,
mm-hmm,
because that's just how planetary ecology works.
I like the idea of flying squirrels the size of cars.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Because if we have megaflora, then these animals will have evolved in a way to maneuver the flora easily, aside from being bigger and being scaled up to it. So I feel like there is a type of mammal that has like skin wings, essentially, kind of like a flying squirrel, that can maneuver in the trees easily.
Oh, Alan, they became the dogs.
Yes, they became the dogs, and they're a mode of transportation.
Yeah,
like people
like
made
really
saddles for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
So they're horse, dog, flying squirrels.
Somewhere in there, yeah. Alan, unfortunately, you've just put a demon of a thought in my head, and I hate you for it a little bit.
You're welcome.
If we have those creatures,
there has to be predators.
There's giant spiders in this world, Alan, and I hate it.
There are giant spiders. There are giant snakes.
I hate it. I don't mind the snakes. That's fine. But giant spiders are just...
Here's the question.
Awful?
Are they big enough to eat people?
Yes. Well,
The more we talk about it, the more... Because initially I was seeing it like, oh, it's basically scaled to like someone who'd be 3 feet tall here. Like, it's scaled like that. But the more I think about it, or the more we're talking about it, the more Lilliputian it seems.
I feel like this is probably closer to like a 2 foot tall human.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that some spiders or some variety of what passes for spiders probably could try to take a human. But I think we're still pretty top of the food chain.
Oh, yeah. I think one of the things human beings are very good at are asserting dominance in new areas, whether they're wanted or not. So, you know, I think especially after being there for a few years, the fauna have learned. You know, some of them are still daring and will still try. And there are things that humans can't beat, especially when you start talking about the giant reptiles. Yeah, we can kill them, but they're still very large. And every so often, they still get one of us, and they're very happy when they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, following kind of the predator line, like, there's definitely giant reptiles, because why wouldn't there be? There's a plentiful bounty of solar energy for their cold-blooded nature. So they could get pretty dang big. But also, there's probably some equivalent of a feline or lupin predator.
Mm-hmm.
Or feline or canine, I suppose I should say, not lupin. I mean, I'm sure there are also some fairly impressive thieves on this world.
Well, true. But I mean, there could be lupine animals.
Yeah, oh, man, can you imagine what an ursine equivalent would be?
Oh, my God.
It would be so good. It would basically
it would
be that,
a
like,
house.
Hairless, it would be at least be like an upscaled hairless bear.
The size of a house.
Yeah. Okay, so let's...
That's horrific and amazing.
I love it. Yeah, it's great. So we're at 17 minutes, so we need to zoom in onto the city. So we need to zoom into the city proper and start talking about its composition somewhat. And then we'll try to zoom in on the school real fast and then deal with other details next time. Okay, so I'm picturing a fairly large city.
Oh, here. Massive, yes.
Like easily Dallas, LA, New York.
Several hundred thousand people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe upwards half a million or more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think we actually need to go much more than half a million. In fact, that might even be pushing it. Because if we have this kind of transportation and colonization going on, there's very little need for overpopulation like that.
Right.
So let's say at its utmost, there's half a million people here.
And it doesn't feel like it. There's lots of room and there's, you know, like, it's not crowded at all.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Just, I think the important thing is, because this city is the hub of this planet, yeah, there's naturally going to be more people here. Plus, there's three species worth of people here.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we need to remember. So I'm picturing here, like, a bunch of these trees are... Like, it's of course grouped into districts, but you could have even a thing where an entire tree is a district.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there could be an entire art district just in, like, a tight cluster of a couple trees.
Right, exactly.
There could be an entire tree that's just a super mall.
One of the, like, bases for space exploration is as far up the tree as they dared go.
Yeah, and it just is over, like, a dozen trees, all just kind of interconnected. So I'm definitely seeing, like, you take the base tree and you put some access, like, some windows into it, and then you put some, like, verandas that have that dome glass on it, and you have, like, walkways going between the trees and, like, tramways and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picturing very much, like, a really good Ewok village, just... way up the tech train.
Yep.
And I love it. So what are, this is going to be the capital of, I guess, planetary representation back to whatever the council is back on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
This is also going to be like planetary government.
Right.
Because that's kind of the only way this works is the council runs everything and they delegate things out. So like Earth has its own government and then each kind of like major region has another government. The same way America is kind of set up, like
right,
federal,
exactly.
State, local. It's just multiplied out a bit because you have like imperial and imperial planetary, I guess, continental,
mm-hmm.
regional, local, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the best way to describe it. So we have to have that all replicated. So there needs to be a planetary government seat and then also a regional and local government seat all in this mm-hmm. city. That's a lot, but that all, maybe that's all just like another like two or three trees that are close together.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's two or three trees and it's the only ones that we have found in the forest that do this that actually intertwine with each other. Like they grew in and around each other.
Ooh, maybe it's one of these situations where it's like one tree and something made it like split into a couple of branches. Like you've seen oak trees do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe it's that situation. So it's the same tree, which is they chose that one because it's one kind of near the middle and two symbolic as hell.
I was about to say symbolism.
Yeah, listen, governments are nothing if they don't know how to use symbolism to their power and advantage. I dig that. We talked briefly about an art district. Like, there's got to be like a theater and entertainment and all that kind of stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't think we need to spend any more time in the city because we can add things as
I
needed.
Don't either because I could go on and on and on. But what
Assume,
district is the school in?
I mean, it's its own tree, right?
I think that makes sense. Yeah. Is it a residential school?
Ooh, you know what? I think it might be.
I think so too. Like they go and visit, they can leave like on weekends and stuff like that. But mostly it's a residential school.
Well, and I imagine that's partially because one, it's supposed to be a site where all three of the species interact. And you got to start that process young or
yep.
you get racism. I guess speciesism in this case. But you got to start that integration young or it's just always going to be assholes.
Yep.
So one, it's supposed to be like super integrating the three species. Two, if this is still a functioning and expanding colony planet, there's probably going to be like, and this might be a bit of a trigger for some people, but there's probably some, like, orphan kids who are sent here.
Oh, yeah.
Like, send them here, educate them, they get a plot of land when they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems fine. Like, education and then, like, entry into government or service or colonial work for a few years, and then you get land. Ta-da! Mm-hmm. It's a good system. It works. So, yeah, I think it does need to be a residential school. I think, Alan, and this might be weird, so let's feel free to have a conversation about this if we need to. What if we go ahead and blur the lines here and say that this is 8th grade through undergrad?
So it goes all the way up through...
I think it potentially can go all the way through an undergraduate degree. Like, you're not required to attend school past 12th grade. If you want, then you can go to a university anywhere else that you can get acceptance. Like, you can go back to Earth. You can still go to Oxford if you want. You can go to a university on one of the other two species planets if they'll accept you. Or if you don't necessarily want to go, like, hard in on academia in one of those areas, like hardened academics, like human academics or any of those, but you still want to do something that requires an undergraduate degree, you mm-hmm. can just stay. Like, you move to a different, like, definitely kind of isolated level of the school. Like, there
right,
needs
you
to
move
be
to a different
separation.
District.
Yeah, like, some separation there, but, like, I think if this tree on the school, or maybe two trees, run all the way from eighth grade up through undergrad, one that gives us a better range of time to play in mm-hmm. for players and games, and two, like, that just kind of makes good sense.
I also like the idea of the older students, while they don't directly interact, maybe, you know, obviously their studies happen elsewhere. Maybe there is a communal dining area. So there is still interaction between the older students and the younger students. And, you know, maybe some, like, familial relationships are formed.
I like that. I think there's probably several communal dining areas, and some mm-hmm. are, like, pretty clearly down in the lower levels, or whatever levels are, like, 8th and 9th grade and 10th grade. Mm-hmm. And then, like, some are clustered around, like, 11th, 12th, and college freshmen. And then there are some that are just kind of, like, understood to be, like, this is where people who are, like, really serious about finishing their degrees now, thank you, go away. Like, anyone's allowed anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's not entirely super okay if a college senior goes down to, like, the 8th grade.
Yeah.
Because it does also need to be that kind of, at least, cultural, like, hey, maybe don't. Maybe stick with your people.
Yeah.
Or your age, I guess.
Yes.
It's, like, the only reason I say that is because I think it is important. Like, yes, you can absolutely have familial bonds that extend up and down age.
But some people are going to get gross, and, yeah.
And it's also very important for people to make friends in and around their age bracket. Like, that's how culture develops.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how it's shared and passed on and things like that. So I think it can be one of those things, like, you can eat anywhere. This is kind of where all your stuff happens. So if you're, well, I guess up in the university side, there's probably things like entire levels that are just for different
Oh, absolutely. But there's also, I think, some programming. So, like, there is a night where first-year collegiate students or first-year university students tutor eighth-grade students or whatever. Like, there are specific, deliberate programming things to make them interact so that they don't view each other as, you know, different beings almost, as they can be like, oh, yeah, I remember when I went through this program and, you know, I had a mentor and, you know, I talked to this person, but now I get to be the mentor and I get a mentee and that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, and that's very, very important. That should be done more, honestly, like, especially
in real life. Yeah.
Well, especially because in that environment, it's going to be, one, monitored, and it's going to be, like, they're not going to let creeps in.
Yep.
So it's safer. There's always people. People are people everywhere you go.
Yep.
But it is probably in, like, a so I love that a whole lot. Alan, I think there's absolutely, like, there's got to be sporting areas as part of the trees. So what I'm picturing is, like, two trees. The school, this entire school complex is two trees that are pretty near each other. I'm picturing, like, a big running track that kind of goes between them. So mm-hmm. in parts you're running in trees, like, inside the tree, and then part of it you're running outside the tree. Like,
oh, that's cool, yeah.
And then in between that is, like, the big stadium area.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever the sport is, like, literally suspended between the two trees.
And there have definitely been brave souls that kind of do parkour, but in the natural environment. So there are obviously games that have moved with the people from their home planets, but, like, new sports are being invented incorporating things that they're learning about the planets.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Like the planet.
I mean, okay, Alan, low grav plus high tech, Quidditch is 100% a real sport now.
Oh, for sure, yes.
And, like, the Snitch is just a really high-tech drone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've said before we can't steal things from other people, but...
Yeah, you literally just said that, Matt.
I did. I'm sorry. I'm a hypocrite. But we're doing that because, come on. Don't even look at me, listener, and say you would not play Quidditch if you could.
Transparasteel.
You nerds. Okay, we're about to ding. Are we at a place where we feel like we're going to be good to start developing stuff about the school next time?
I think so. I think we're going to be able to dig into the educational culture of this planet, that we're going to be able to really discuss the interactions of the students. We've talked about it a little bit, but I think we've laid enough groundwork that it'll be fairly easy for us to discuss what makes them different, but also what unites them.
Yes, I like that. Yeah. Cool. So next time we'll cover the three species and kind of the inner workings of the school.
Yep, sounds good to me. So until next time, I've been Alan.
I've been Matt.
For John.
You can find Alan at Alan_Sells on Twitter. You can find Matt at Matt Hoadley on Twitter. You can reach the show at Forging_Worlds or by emailing us, ForgingWorlds@FifthDraw.com. This show and the rest of the Fifth Draw family of shows can be found at FifthDraw.com. Forging Worlds is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.